Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Sustainable Investing Perspectives podcast on the UBS Conversations podcast channel. For today's conversation, in part, it will preview the upcoming United Nations Climate Change Conference, or Conference of the Parties, more commonly known as COP for short, as well as reflect on the recent New York Climate Week, which took place back in late September. Joining us for the conversation today, glad to welcome back from the UBS Chief Investment Office, Andrew Lee, Head of Sustainable and Impact Investing. Glad to have with us as well for the conversation today, Lucy Thomas, Head of Sustainable Investing for UBS Asset Management. So with that, Andrew and Lucy, it's great to be with you both here today on the podcast. Thank you for spending some time with our listeners and our clients, and looking forward to our conversation today.
Thanks for having us, Dan.
Lovely to be here, Dan.
Andrew, perhaps as a starting point for our listeners, our clients, can you provide them with a brief refresher as to what COP is and maybe speak to some of the key initiatives on this year's agenda?
Sure, Dan. So just to level set for everyone, COP refers to the annual United Nations Climate Change Conference. COP is the acronym for Conference of the Parties. And it's important for anyone who's thinking about climate because it's the regular key convening of governments, climate leaders, companies, investors, NGOs, you know, and a range of public and private participants to get together to agree commitments and really catalyze needed action on climate for the year ahead and longer. So COP29 is the 29th annual iteration of the conference. The first one was held in Berlin back in 1995. So this is the 29th. It will be held in Baku, Azerbaijan. And it is now just a few weeks away, kicking off on November 11th. Just to give people a sense of it, the COP gatherings are not small. Something on the order of 40,000 attendees are expected in Azerbaijan, although that's slightly smaller than the numbers for COP28 in Dubai last year. But it is a meaningful gathering of all the types that I mentioned before. You know, I think the key initiative on the agenda for COP29 is climate finance and new goal setting around capital and mobilizing capital to support developing countries in making the transition to the low carbon economy. There are lots of other topics on the agenda, too, at the intersection of climate and finance, like cross-border energy infrastructure, scale up of energy storage and grids, clean hydrogen, and voluntary carbon markets. But the key thing will be around climate finance. And so this is known as the finance COP.
So, Andrew, that's interesting. Maybe running with that top agenda item, you mentioned climate finance for this year. From CIO's vantage point, Andrew, can climate finance, in fact, be delivered, especially when you think about geopolitical turmoil as well as local politics, both as key considerations?
Well, I guess that's the big question. You know, there's a lot of capital that needs to be mobilized to drive climate and progress on climate in the coming years. There's an estimate from the high-level expert group on climate finance that something on the order of $2.4 trillion a year is needed by 2030, which, by the way, isn't that far away, to meet climate and nature goals. That statistic is four times current levels and a big number in the current environment, as you mentioned. Just for context, back in 2009, so 15 years ago, developed nations pledged to mobilize $100 billion annually for climate action. That goal was actually achieved 2 years ago, but it's expiring. And so now the establishment of a new collective quantified goal, floored at the level of $100 billion, hopefully, will be the objective. And again, that funding is going to help developing countries to develop and implement their own climate action plans as part of the low carbon transition. And so with public funding making up, 80% or more of international climate funding, most of that coming from multilateral funding, there is a dependence on where that funding comes from and what it's subject to. And, coming up in the near term, there's a lot in the political realm that could affect the success of getting to meaningful numbers. When COP29 convenes, right? What's coming up? U.S. elections are taking place the week before, and depending on the outcome, as we all know, we could see U.S. withdrawal again from the Paris Agreement, and a slowing of climate negotiation and willingness to participate in funding commitments. So a lot of uncertainty coming from that. The EU is signaling that, you know, rather than increasing significantly, the $100 billion floor is more where they think things should be maintained. And so, you know, there's a lot in the near term that could determine whether we see this commitment to climate finance at the scale that's really needed come through in a meaningful way. So I think that's going to be the focus here. Yes, geopolitics will play into it. Local politics will play into it. The one thing that's worth mentioning also is that in establishing or committing to such goals, you know, the hope of many around the table is that that will come with meaningful and higher standards to ensure the accountability and the credibility of how that capital is actually deployed. So generally, we're hopeful for progress at COP29, but with, you know, and especially given the increasing recognition across the public and private sector of the negative implications of not getting there. But that is what we'll see, what will play out in the next few weeks. Then. You know, Lucy, I don't know if you have any thoughts that you wanted to add to that.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. And I think picking up on this geopolitical angle is quite interesting for what that looks like at COP, because we have observed that geopolitics is higher on the priorities or the economic risk topics that investors are devoting time to at the moment, and higher even than climate change when we look across certain surveys compared to a couple of years ago, where climate change was ranking in the top one, two, or three risks. So does this have an implication for climate finance? Well, we think that many of the geopolitical topics and issues are ultimately influenced by the underlying bigger macro trends of climate change. We know geopolitics and sustainability are closely interlinked, and that interconnection creates risks. So climate change, for example, can lead to more scarcity in resources, such as water and land, can lead to conflict between nations. We know physical climate and weather events are impacting supply chain resilience. We know climate change-related migration, which is the highest form of migration, by the way, is putting pressure on governments and fueling extremism or political polarization. And then tariffs and protectionism, we've seen that increase the price of EV vehicles for consumers. What does this do for speed of adoption and the overall pace of the energy transition? So I think it's going to be very interesting to see through what lens some of the topics get discussed, particularly given geopolitics is so big on agendas. And then how do investors looking at climate finance manage some of these risks? Well, ultimately, our first rule of risk management is to search for sources of diversification. So by diversifying across the countries and regions, corporates and investors can maybe better manage the risk of the interplay that's going on between geopolitics and climate at the moment. Those with a strong sustainability agenda can prioritize value chains, and countries with strong commitments to sustainability, to climate, robust governance, stable environmental regulations, high human capital standards. So I think they're some of the ways we think the conversation will play out at COP. In particular, though, you mentioned the focus will be on developing economies, Andrew, and you talked about where some of that funding comes from for climate finance. So when we look at where some of that funding goes, 20% of global clean energy investment goes into EN, for example, and now that's ex-China. But one of the things we do know is that the emerging market area is an incredibly efficient place to avoid carbon emissions. So the cost of capital may be larger than developed markets, but avoiding a ton of carbon emissions in emerging markets is typically 50% less cost. So we have to be creative, I think, about ways to de-risk some of these areas to invest and prioritize energy efficiency. And for investors that have any decarbonization or climate goals, considering the role of emerging markets in a portfolio then is very interesting in terms of the opportunities across power generation, transmission, distribution, even the energy transition value chain, such as critical minerals or material processing, recycling technology. So some interesting areas there when we think about what the opportunities in climate finance are in terms of where the capital goes.
So, Lucy, on a somewhat related note, when you think about global meetings of the minds, only a few weeks ago at this point, back in late September, you were one of over 100,000 visitors to New York Climate Week. Curious from what you picked up on, Lucy, where do you think the global community has momentum and can be advanced at COP?
Absolutely. I was very lucky to be in New York for Climate Week and had a lovely welcome from my colleague, Andrew. Hopefully he'll do the same again next year. It was huge compared to the year before. There were 50% more events, over 900 events, lots of innovators, investors, regulators from all over the world. And of course, we had the government representatives and the UN dignitaries filling up the roads with motorcades. It doesn't feel, as Andrew said, it doesn't feel like Baku is going to get the same uplift in attendance this year as COP28 maybe did last year. But let's see what happens. In terms of the topics that were covered or where there was momentum, Dan, two areas. One, I think there was a common thread of realism and practicality that took hold. So less ambitious goals and more focus on action, I suppose, in a simple translation that says we really have a lot more work to do. We're missing the 1.5 degree goal by a long shot. And as people have seen on their TV screens or on the front page of news, or maybe even experienced yourself in person, we're feeling the consequences of climate through storms, fires and floods. Decarbonizing an infrastructure built over 100 years ago isn't easy. And then doubling that to satisfy the insatiable demand from data centers is hard. But finally, doing it reliably in the face of increasingly powerful storms and the massive investment it's going to take, it's a hard equation to solve. And I think that's why the practicality is taking hold. There's no one magical technology here, but a long journey of proven and new innovations being adopted and partnerships across sectors to find practical solutions that actually made a difference. So there was a lot of evidence of that happening, and I think that was really good to see. It feels like the idealists and the technologists and the financiers who are new to sustainability are really starting to embrace this hard reality. I think the second topic that really stood out for me that I think will continue to get momentum in COP will be, it was around nature, and it took center stage in a lot of the climate discussions in New York, and voluntary carbon markets were kind of the resurgence of confidence in that area. We saw the Symbiosis Coalition, which is Salesforce, Meta, Microsoft and Google all getting together to make a 20 million ton advanced market commitment in nature-based carbon removal. So that idea again of partnerships across players to advance. We saw guidelines issued by the CFTC on unregulated carbon offsets, and that was promoted by the Treasury Secretary. And we saw examples of proof pointing. So the World Bank showcased its latest bond structures that it's doing in nature-based solutions. So it was really positive to see some of these really actionable solutions starting to be proof pointed and showcased. And I think we should expect and hope to see some of that come out in COP. Interestingly, this area, Article 6, doesn't feature on the COP agenda, but we do think that it will be robustly debated, and we'll be paying attention to announcements that focus on transparency and standard setting, because we think this has the potential to influence the allocations and build further confidence in these markets. What about you, Andrew? What were your thoughts?
Thanks, Lucy. I definitely agree with these points, many of which were addressed in various forums that you and I were both at throughout the week. I'd echo your highlight on voluntary carbon markets, which came up in a number of discussions, with more optimism and still a lot of discussion on how to address concerns around quality and integrity and supply, as always. And I think addressing these issues is really what will be needed in order to attract corporate buyers and really scale up the market in a meaningful way. Another key thing that came up was the operationalization of decarbonization, with corporate and investor action seen as much more important than, commitments or talk or just a disclosure topic. And so concrete transition planning is at the fore, and companies need to understand and communicate how their actions are actually connecting to bottom line value creation, always critical. And of course, the related conversation around financing for such operationalization, also a key topic. We know that public and private investment will be needed in significant size to drive this decarbonization through renewables infrastructure, materials inputs, and other enabling initiatives. And so, again, the focus or the critical driver on bringing more investment capital to bear is going to be clear demonstration of bottom line impact, cost or risk avoided. A couple last things maybe to mention that came up that were interesting. Nature and climate are obviously inextricably intertwined. And so there continues to be increased focus on preservation of nature, development of natural capital solutions, and what it means for investments. And then second, considering the social impacts of climate action, thinking about the just transition, also important and also a topic that came up during the week. So all very relevant topics, nicely, I think, setting the stage for COP29, which is just around the corner.
As we look ahead to COP29 coming up soon in the way of pledges, commitments, anything in the way of low-hanging fruit, so to speak, for negotiators?
Some of the topics on the agenda for COP29 that perhaps are less political in nature might be some of the easier ones to approach. So a few that we've identified are everything around cross-border energy infrastructure, global pledges around green energy zones and corridors, global energy storage and grid pledge, so that we can increase installed energy storage capacity to 1,500 gigawatts by 2030. That's six times the 2022 level. I think the recognition of the bottlenecks on the energy infrastructure side make it a little bit easier and perhaps less political in nature. The second one that I might call out is hydrogen and thinking about how to harmonize global hydrogen markets. Again, a bit less contentious, a bit less political, but with real long-term potential investment implications and positive opportunities from a capital deployment perspective. So interesting to see as the markets kind of match where technology is going to. And I think the last one that's interesting and perhaps a little bit more low-hanging fruit is reduction of methane emissions from waste and food. And this is building on the global methane pledge that was signed by 150 countries last year and really focused on reductions of methane that really need to go much farther in the next in this decade leading up to 2030. So I think those three, methane, hydrogen, and green energy infrastructure, are probably ones that are less political and easier to achieve.
And so extending on maybe from, wouldn't it be great, Andrew, if we saw some of those areas really get some attention? But I'm going to take an angle slightly different and actually maybe some of the social side of climate. It did start to emerge at Climate Week where we saw, the interlink between some of the social aspects. And it's probably no surprise because it happens at the same time as the UN General Assembly. And so there's other events on health and education. But I think one thing that was really obvious compared to the discussion on, on some of the things you're talking about, which are actually the practical and real solutions, was when it comes to climate and health, we know the links, but the action is lagging. So I think this is an area for low-hanging fruit for negotiators to pick up at the ante on commitments, particularly as we've seen announcements of large-scale initiatives announced on nutrition, for example, from some big philanthropies. We know there's an opportunity to pick up the gender lens on climate. Females are disproportionately affected by climate. And there has been a recent push by G7 on gender parity, so that the broad group of public and private investors committed to invest $20 billion in women's economic empowerment in the next 3 years. There's also a new World Bank strategy out. So I think these were great areas for negotiators to push the boundaries on at COP. You emphasized earlier, Andrew, that 2030 is only just around the corner. And I was working out that my 9-year-old will be 15 years old by then. And I'm pretty sure she's going to be able to take up a strong debate with me on what have you guys been doing for the last 6 years on climate. So let's hope there's some really great things that come out of COP, really good actions, and some of those topics that you mentioned get some momentum.
Well, Lucy, Andrew, thank you both for spending some time today with our clients and listeners here on UBS Conversations for the Sustainable Investing Perspectives podcast to preview COP29. Would be great perhaps in a few weeks to reconvene and hear some observations and takeaways from the conference. So thank you both again for spending some time with us today.
Thanks again, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights, at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliates. The views and opinions expressed in this material by external guest speakers are those of the author, speaker, and are not those of UBS, its subsidiaries, or affiliates. Accordingly, UBS does not accept any liability over the content of this material or any claims, losses, or damages arising from the use or reliance of all or any part thereof. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.